First of all, this is Gaudete Sunday. Gaudete in Latin means rejoice, and it's taken from the first word of the entrance antiphon for this Sunday. Rejoice always, I say it again, rejoice. And rejoice comes up in all three of the readings, and it's in the opening prayer as well. So talk about a theme Sunday, this is it. And of course, it's the pink candle, because it's different from the other three Sundays. It's less solemn, less penitential, and more filled with rejoicing. So, rejoice why? Because the Lord is near. Because the expectation that we've been longing for is coming. And, you know, Advent is about the three comings of Christ, his coming 2,000 years ago, his coming at the end of time, and his coming right now. And there's something about salvation that is always now. And we, our understanding, our appreciation, our trust that it's now comes largely from our memory, from remembering how he was here before and what he has already done. And so we read from the scriptures every Sunday. We read about the acts of God throughout history. We read and we begin to, over time, trust in the fact that God has always cared for God's people, and God necessarily then cares for me as well. So, the first reading, of course, is always from the Old Testament, and a little Old Testament history always helps. You know, last week we heard from Isaiah that someone needs to cry out in the desert, prepare the way of the Lord. And so this evening we hear from John the Baptist saying that same thing. When they ask him, well then, who are you? He says, well, I am that person crying out in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, as Isaiah the prophet predicted. They ask him, are you the Messiah? No, I'm not the Christ. Are you the return of Elijah? Remember last week we were saying that the expectation was that Elijah would return and that would be the final days. And he says, no, I'm not Elijah. Strange the way God acts. God is forceful and determined, but very patient. And God almost always acts through human beings, and they have to figure it out in a way on their own how that's coming about. And so you have to appreciate John the Baptist. He has this great success, you might say, this following. People coming from Jerusalem out to the wilderness to be baptized in the Jordan by him, to hear his message of repentance, of turning around and returning to Israel in some kind of final way, in some kind of permanent way. And yet, at the same time, he's recognizing that he is not the Christ. And there are people telling him that he is. And even the Pharisees come out and ask him, are you the Messiah? But it takes this immense amount of humility for him to discern within his own heart and with his own mind who he actually is. And so they ask him all these different, are you this, are you this, are you this? And finally he says, no, I'm just this person who is being used by God. I don't even understand it all that well. I just know that I'm being used by God to speak this voice in the desert. But I do discern that somebody is coming after me. Someone who is among you even though you don't recognize him. And I am not worthy to loosen the sandal straps on his feet. So John the Baptist is a precursor, and he comes to realize that in almost in these conversations. You know how when you're talking to someone and they're asking you questions and you're trying to describe your situation, and as you're saying it out loud, you're thinking, yeah, that is what it is. You know, that's who I am. That's what's going on in my life. Okay. Isaiah, in that first reading, predicts that there is a year of favor coming from the Lord. Now, in the Old Testament, the whole Old Testament is really about the first five books. And all the books after that are always hearkening back to the Torah, to the law, to the word that was given on Sinai to Moses. And the heart of the law is the first commandment. Love the Lord your God with your whole heart, mind, and soul, and I am a jealous God, and I will have no other gods before me. And so the heart of Israel is recognizing that all these other gods don't even exist. There's really only one God. And yet they found it difficult to hold on to that. And so they started worshiping some of the gods of their neighbors from time to time. Baal was one of the ones that they struggled with the most. And Isaiah and other prophets, they keep reminding them, no, you belong to the Lord. And the law is all about keeping that faithfulness to God who is faithful to you. It's about the covenant. I will be your God and you will be my people. And so when God delivers them through Joshua into the promised land, he parcels out everything. One house, one plot of land for each family. Everything is equal. But over time, things become unequal. Some people are harder working than others. Some people are more industrious than others. Eventually, land is purchased by other people, and so you've lost your heritage. You've lost your land. But every 50 years, it was written into the Torah. Every 50 years was a jubilee year, and all the land had to be given back to its original owners. Now, there's not much evidence in history that that ever actually happened. In a way, after a certain amount of time, that becomes like giving back this Kansas to the Kansa Indians. How are you going to do that? You know, it would be a matter of justice to do that, and yet it has become impossible to do that. And so when Isaiah is predicting a jubilee year, a once and for all, forever jubilee year, a year of favor from the Lord, he's not talking about the every 50 years thing. He's not talking about that vague dream of justice that they held out in front of them. He's talking about the justice of God, a justice that God is going to bring about because we can't. A justice that will be beyond just the simple laws that we have, you know, collected around the Torah. Is Isaiah talking about Jesus? Well, we Christians have interpreted it that way for centuries. But obviously Isaiah was preaching 500 years before Christ. He knew nothing about Jesus. He's talking not so much about one person, he's talking about Israel as a person, the nation of Israel. And Israel, which was always God's project, you know, they were the elect, the chosen ones. Why? Because they said yes to God's divine plan of a just society where everything would be equal and all would be treated the same. And there would be no inequality, injustice, no poverty. Everyone would have all they need. And so Isaiah is saying the time is going to come when that's actually going to happen. Now, interestingly, early in Jesus' public ministry, he's worshiping in the synagogue in Nazareth, and it's his turn to do the reading. And so they hand him the scroll from Isaiah, and he opens it to this very spot that we heard tonight. And I have come to proclaim a year of favor from the Lord, justice to the poor, liberty to captives, sight to the blind, all those things. And then he puts down the scroll and looks at them and says, today this prophecy is fulfilled in your hearing. Jesus is the awaited one. Jesus is the one who in his person is going to bring this justice that God has always planned. And it's not going to wait any longer. It's now. It's the eschatological Israel, the final and permanent gathering of God's people in justice and in truth and in peace and in love. And it's in his person. And so he begins to gather disciples around himself who are going to live that. And that's us. That's the church. at least in idealistic language, in what we might call kingdom language, that's where we are now. We are in the final days. It's already arrived if we would only access it, if we would only accept that truth. But to accept that truth about myself would mean that I would have to let go of a lot of my other projects, because actually I'm an idolater. I'm not absolutely faithful to the one God. I have all kinds of gods. They're my projects, my possessions, my talents, my, you know, my reputation, you know, my ego, all those things. The only way that I could access that would be to be like Jesus and to give all my projects and all my personhood over to the Father's will and say, there it is. I exist to do your will, not my own. I exist for others, not for myself. And it looks like the cross. And I don't want to do that. That's why I don't access it, because I'm afraid I'm not up to the task. I'm afraid of what will happen to me if I just completely say yes to all that. So that's why it's already but not yet. It's already here. It's been handed to us. It's been won for us on the cross. It's already a done deal. But the reason we can't quite sing the victory song is because we're afraid. Because we're not ready yet. So in this Advent season, this season of hope, this season of expectation and rejoicing because it's so near, we want to pray that it would be near in our hearts, that we would be near to it, that we would have the courage and the faith to accept it.